This is a Christian Science Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website mbeinstitute.org. The Institute was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright. The website was launched shortly thereafter, being one of the earliest ones on the Internet. This prayer treatment is extemporaneous. The subject is the platform of divine metaphysics, which comprises 32 planks, and this particular prayer treatment is on plank 23, and the specific topic is the indivisibility of the infinite. The primary goal of every prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute is to follow the words of Jesus, which are quoted at the very beginning of the textbook, which is entitled Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Mary Baker Eddy is the discoverer, founder, and leader of Christian Science, as well as the system of divine metaphysics. The quote being referred to are the words of Jesus and state, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Some Bibles state it as set free. "Ye shall know the truth, and ye shall be set free." So our primary goal is to search for and learn and understand the truth. On page 126 of the textbook, Mary Baker Eddy states, "The Bible has been my only authority. I have had no other guide in, quote, the straight and narrow way, end of quote, of truth." And that is with a capital T, truth. Mary Baker Eddy devised a method to make her writings more clear, and it is called capitalization. When a word is capitalized after the first word of the sentence, it means that it represents God. And if it is the first word of the sentence, one would need to be able to spiritually interpret the rest of the sentence in order to tell if that first word refers to God. The first clue is to determine if the first word is one of the seven synonymous terms for God. Those seven terms for God are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. There are a few other words that do refer to God, and you will learn those as you study the textbook. As a general rule, if the topic is an absolute statement, then it refers to God. If it is a relative statement, then it does not refer to God. For example, a relative statement would refer to man. If the topic one is considering is healing, then of course there is going to be a mixture of relative and absolute statements. One way to view a method of healing is to, first of all, find the root of the cause based on material belief, and then make sure that we spiritualize so that we get to the real root, which may or may not be what the symptom indicates. Once one has found the problem, then one could merely begin their treatment by saying, "There is no and then state the problem as stated as one defines it to the best of their understanding at the present moment. Once the one simple statement is made to deny that it is real or has existence, then switch your thinking to the absolute by declaring what God is, and that God includes what man is, because man is the image and likeness of God. This is stated in Genesis chapter 1. It says, "Let us make man in our image and likeness." So God made man in his image and after his likeness. Merely stating words rarely is effective. It would only be effective if one has at least some understanding of what the words really mean. And when I say some understanding, it means that they have studied it thoroughly and they have utilized it with some success already. The last thing one wants to do is to be passive. Thomas Burke gave us a statement directly related to that, and this was some 200 to 300 years ago. He said, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." So we don't want to be one of those that are classified as doing nothing. We have to be dynamic. We have to be active, kinetic. The one sure way of not making any mistakes if you do nothing. But that's also the sure way to fail in life. Not just on a particular project, but in life. Mary Baker Eddy states, "Infinite progression is concrete being." That's from Miscellaneous Writings, page 82. The best method for success is to remember what Mary Baker Eddy says about reality. From page 116, she says, "Spiritual wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness." So that should be a general framework that we want to keep always in the forefront of our thought. Once we make the decision that we want to really pursue what Christian Science is all about, and if there are benefits available, that's going to definitely be an attraction for you. And these are some of the benefits that others have said come from a serious study and living the life of a Christian Scientist. Number one, it is not only curative, but also preventative. Some of the practicality of Christian Science has been stated on page 128 of the textbook. Mary Baker Eddy states the following: "The term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to His government of the universe, inclusive of man. From this it follows that businessmen and cultured scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with this spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. A knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity." Again, that is from Science and Health, page 128. What is the second quote at the beginning of the textbook? It's from Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And we just discussed here a little bit about thinking. And the exact words are the last sentence of the practical science paragraph, and it says, it raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. If you connect what Shakespeare says with this statement, you've got a winner. Here are a couple of statements to orient to what divine metaphysics and healing are all about. On page 146, under the category of science, she states, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And think of disease as anything that is discordant, anything that is less than perfection, in any form that it takes. Could be sin, sickness, disease, even death. Any problem with any kind of a relationship, any event. On page 330, she says the following, and this is about how to demonstrate or bring forth a healing in the system of divine metaphysics. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. You notice she says, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood. So she's talking about 32, which is plural, but she says is, which is singular. So she's telling us, if there's a single plank of the platform that is not understood, we may fall through that open space. Because we need all 32 to be counted as a unit of one. Imagine a speaker standing up on a platform and it has some space. He has to be careful where he walks. Of course, it's better to have a solid platform with no empty spaces. And of course, what is a platform? We build on top of the platform. So that's the foundation. Here is the text of the platform for plank 23. God is indivisible. A portion of God could not enter man. Neither could God's fullness be reflected by a single man, else God would be manifestly finite, lose the deific character, and become less than God. Allness is the measure of the infinite, and nothing less can express God. Genesis 1, starting with verse 26, states the following, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And then it ends up saying, And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. As you're probably aware, Genesis chapter 1 is divided into seven primary topics, and each one is considered a day. And man was created on the sixth day, after he did everything else. And as you will find out when you study it, the seventh day is the day of rest. So he had done everything in 6 days. It was recited to you that the Bible was Mary Baker Eddy's only authority. So let's see what Mary Baker Eddy says about man. On page 591 in the glossary, which is part of the Key to the Scriptures. Remember, the title is Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. The first 14 chapters are Science and Health. Chapters 15 through 18 are Key to the Scriptures. And chapter 14 is Recapitulation, which means that it's a summary of chapters 1 through 13. So here is what Mary Baker Eddy states in chapter 14 on page 475. Man is not matter. He is not made up of brain, blood, bones, and other material elements. The scriptures inform us that man is made in the image and likeness of God. Now, if we skip to the Key to the Scriptures, that includes chapter 17, which is the glossary. And this is what it says about man. Man is the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. If one remembers those three passages, the two from Science and Health and the one from the Bible, that gives us an excellent background in knowing what we should be reflecting in our thought, speech, and action. And why do I say thought? Because of the second quote from Shakespeare. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. What kind of thinking are we going to be doing? Are we going to be doing the kind of thinking that we're responsible to do? And that is to reflect God? What does the Science and Health say about the definition of good? God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. If you think you did a good thing, you're having a view that is egotistical. God is defined as good, not man. Man is the image and likeness of God, so goodness that we do has to be considered that we are doing it as an image of the goodness of God. God's character passing through us or being reflected by us is the source of the goodness. So we should say, thank you, God, for showing me how to do this event which is benefiting humanity. That would be a much more accurate way to state it than think of yourself as doing good. Many times, the best way to define reality is to flip the definition of unreality. And this is what it says about mortal man, which of course is unreality. Because if we're going to be spiritual, we're not going to be mortal. We may look like we're mortal, but our real being is not what is visible. Well, our real being is invisible. But our actions should be reflecting the invisible nature of the real man, which of course is an image and likeness of God. So this is what is stated about mortal mind. Whoever is incompetent to explain soul would be wise not to undertake the explanation of body. Life is, always has been, and ever will be independent of matter. For life, and that's a capital L, is God. And man is the idea of God, not formed materially, but spiritually, and not subject to decay and dust. The psalmist said, "Thou madest him to have dominion over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things under his feet." And we're talking about the man that slew Goliath and became King David. This is from the book of David, which is Psalms. It says, whoever is incompetent to explain soul would be wise not to undertake the explanation of body. Soul is defined as spiritual sense. Spiritual because spirit is the only real substance. And spirit is flawless. Spirit is transparent. So if one is referring to a substance of spirit, they're referring to a substance which is without flaws. It is total purity. Therefore, it is totally transparent and totally reflective. So our ability to reflect God comes from God. And our ability to reflect anything that we understand correctly about God and reflect that in our thought, speech, and action will automatically be magnified, duplicated, or rather multiplied by going out into the universe of spirit. So that anyone that tunes in to spiritual things which are along the line of what we may have just demonstrated about spirit, will benefit from it. It's said that if we knew the radio frequency for Jesus, that we could actually hear his original voice. Is it any surprise to anyone listening to this recording that God gave us that ability, that capacity, that functionality to be able to do it? Everything is possible to the laws of God. If they're in compliance with the laws of God, then it's possible for us to experience it individually. If we are in alignment with the laws of God, then we will have the power of the laws of God behind what we do, what we think, and what we say. What is the source of all intelligence? Mary Beck Ready states on page 588, intelligence is substance. Self-existent and eternal mind, that which is never unconscious nor limited. It was already mentioned that spirit is God, and spirit is substance. Therefore, if we are going to reflect God and His being the one and only substance, and it being flawless, do we have a problem being short of intelligence? Not a chance. Because the intelligence of God is available to us to reflect it. If we want to understand this plank number 23, all we have to do is let our consciousness be open to the truth which is available by reflecting God as being the only substance. And because the substance is spirit, we can reflect the spirit of the mind of God. Anything to do with mental is a function of mind. I shall read to you the functions of the seven synonymous terms for God. As previously stated, Genesis chapter 1 is divided into 7 days. I shall read to you a short few words on the key function of each of those 7 days as defined by the seven synonymous terms that are in that exact same order in her definition of God on page 465. Number one is mind, source of all mental activity. Two, spirit, the only substance which is flawless. Three, soul, spiritual sense, hearing, feeling, smelling, and tasting. Four, principle, system, and structure in balance. Principle is the structure, and the system comes from mind. Five, life, living qualities of God. Six, truth, consciousness, and motive, which are the engine for results, enables a measurement so there is no deviation, eliminates errors. Seven, love, nurturing all the qualities, and recognizing and understanding their wholeness. Think of life as being the primary function of manhood, and love being the primary function of motherhood, and truth being the primary function of sonship. Life is living qualities of God. Love is nurturing all the qualities and recognizing and understanding their wholeness. And truth, as sonship, is consciousness and motive, which are the engine for results, enables a measurement so there is no deviation, eliminates errors. So Christ Jesus was our primo example for truth. And why? Because he was following the path of God. It says enables a measurement so there is no deviation. Eliminates errors. He was the most perfect man that ever walked on the globe. Because he was constantly measuring himself to make sure he was on the track. The track of truth. The track of God. The perfection. Everything he did was excelling in perfection. Mary Baker Eddy excelled in motherhood. They named the church the Mother Church. She was attacked constantly by everyone, even the members of the church, and specifically the board of directors. Back in those days, a woman could not vote. She could not hold title to property. She was considered a second-class citizen. And in Jesus' day, when it said he preached to 4,000 people and another group of 5,000, it said men plus women and children. So they didn't even count them as an individual, as a human being there in attendance. So there were probably 4 or 5 times that many people really there, counting the women and children. So instead of talking to 4,000 men, he was probably talking to 3 times or 4 or 5 times that many that were really listening. Because the men had such an ego, they thought they knew everything. They knew so much that the women didn't even count. They had a real ego problem. But what did Jesus do to counteract this? He washed his disciples' feet. In those days, probably everyone wore open sandals, and there was more walking done than there was riding. Not everyone had a horse or whatever kind of animal to ride on, a donkey and so forth. So they were probably walking on dirt roads. And it was the normal custom when you visited someone that they would wash your feet. But when Jesus visited Simon at his invitation, that was one of the niceties that Simon overlooked. But Mary Magdalene didn't. She came with fragrant oil and washed, dried his feet with the hairs of her head, and put on the wonderful fragrant oil. She expressed true love, caring. A real science needs to have operators. Mathematics includes the 10 elements of 0 to 9, and the 4 operators are add, subtract, multiply, and divide. So the elements by themselves must be put into action. And that's the purpose of the operators. With the system of divine metaphysics, the 7 synonymous terms, as mentioned, are mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And they are put into operation through 4 operators that are termed the Word, which are the facts about God. They're the facts about the 7 terms for God. Number 2 is the Christ, and that's the translation from matter to spirit. And Jesus was an expert at that, and that's why they called him the title of Christ, Jesus the Christ, But really, the proper way is more correct if it's said Christ Jesus, just like you would say Mr. this, or Dr. this, or Professor this. And the third function is Christianity. And that operator is what enables us to demonstrate. It's the path to healing. And so we have to combine the Word and the Christ in order to be able to demonstrate. Number four is science. And that is translating everything automatically so that we were at the ascension level where we are above the belief of life, truth, and intelligence and matter. We can only see perfection when we are in the science mode. Because the true science includes no flaws. There's no relativity. It's all absolute. Ashkenazi, his first name was Vladimir. Vladimir Ashkenazi was one of the finest musicians known forever. He performed with such perfection that when he gave a Q&A period in one of his performances, one of the staunchest critics said, "How is it possible for you to perform time and time and time again without a single flaw?" His answer was very simple. What do you think it could have been? He said, "I practice, practice, practice until the music plays me." That's probably not the right accent. He was Russian, and I can't speak a single word of Russian. So he removed himself from the performance. He was so in tune with the perfection of the composition that there was not 1 ounce, or in metrics, 1 gram of ego. It was humility from beginning to end, giving all credit to a power outside himself. Practiced until the music played him. Do we want God to be playing us? Are we willing to put forth the effort with perseverance and discipline to really be truly God's child? Are we going to trust God? Are we going to live a life of innocence? Dr. Francis Fluno, he's on our website, F like Frank, L-U-N-O, Fluno. He was one of Mary Baker Eddy's first lecturers. And one of his favorite topics was criticism. He stated that criticism leads to all evil. Imagine that. If we wiped out of our thought, speech, and actions every little speck of criticism that we have about anyone or anything or any relationship, any event, any government, you know, whether it's individual, collective, or universal. Governments are collective, of course. If we wiped any criticism in our entire being, totally out, obliterated it, neutralized it, maybe a better way to say it, then what would we experience? The opposite of criticism. If criticism leads to all evil, the opposite leads to all truth, all goodness, all perfection. Mary Baker Eddy was so convinced of what I'm relating to you that she devoted time every single hour of the day and probably night. She defined it as every waking hour. Every hour. To doing what? Self-examination. Self-examination. To make sure that she was not under any circumstance thinking ill about anyone or anything at any time. She was doing the opposite of going to church for an hour a week, or however many hours it is at some of these churches, and then the rest of their time until the next time they went to church, they went about conducting their business the way as always. She prompted herself every hour to make sure that it was at the forefront of her thought all the time. Boy, if that's not reason enough to stay on the track of truth, I don't know what is. We must establish a plan of discipline so that we have a mechanical way of reminding us to devote thought to exactly this same thing. And if we do it consistently and for long enough period, we will see a change in our own character as it will be transformed from a standard of mediocrity to a standard of perfection. There's a movie entitled Remember the Goal. Highly recommended. In fact, I watched it again just recently, in the last, couple of weeks. It is a message that you can't forget. That's what we need to do. We need to remember the goal. Mary Baker Eddy says we should establish a standard by building a model of our own words. Create it yourself. Prepare it from the references that have great meaning to you. And whenever you are consciously aware that there's something discordant in what you're seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling, anything, any of those five senses, then you jump to a different frame of thought. And of course, when you're talking about something that is mental, it's a piece of cake. You can instantly think that you're somewhere thousands of miles or maybe millions of miles away on some planet somewhere. Frederick L. Rawson was one of the super geniuses of Christian Science. For this purpose, a genius is defined as someone, anyone, who decides on a topic and pursues it in a very methodical, organized manner with great tenacity, perseverance. Nothing will make one quit or give up or give in. If they're knocked down, they get right back up because they know that their pursuit is for an extremely worthwhile purpose. And that's obviously mandatory. It cannot hurt anyone that is involved, and it must bless everyone. In fact, that's the motto of the Christian Science Monitor, established by Mary Baker Eddy: to injure no one and bless all mankind. She was so fed up with the mainstream media because they were not willing to publish the truth, sensationalizing everything, trying to stir people's emotions. The facts didn't matter. They wanted to sell newspapers. So they wanted to excite the emotion that would put somebody's hand in their pocket and get the money out and pay for it. No different than today. So she actually gave up the home that she loved so much because it had been all tailored to the needs of her enlarged family, which were the ones that had been selected that were excellent Christian scientists, and they were together to improve the knowledge of everyone that was interested and to protect it from those who were attacking it. It was like the safe house for Christian Science. And she had to leave there and move to Boston. She was in Concord, New Hampshire. And she had to leave there to go to Boston, because that's where the Mother Church was, to establish the Christian Science Monitor. And that was 3 or 4 years before she left being visible. And it was established as one of the greatest literary papers of all time for reporting the news. Now it's a different story. That's another story. So that's a genius. Somebody has a worthwhile purpose that is going to benefit all mankind and injure no one. And that's what we need to be doing with every one of our activities. That is living the golden rule. That is the opposite of what Edmund Burke refers to when he talks about good men doing nothing. Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. And this is making sure that evil can't even get started because good men are going to do something worthwhile. And that's what we need to cultivate our life doing. The fellow that said, you can take with you only the things you give away, and whatever you take from others, you must leave behind. He's referring to when you pass on. Are we building our life based on what we can take with us, which means what we've given away? That's what we should be doing. We will have the most harmonious life on earth. We will be living heaven on earth. Well, I shouldn't say the most harmonious, because we're going to be attacked. Anybody that is promoting truth is going to be attacked, but the rewards are beyond measure. Beyond measure. Look what Jesus did. He overcame the whole belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. He got rid of the total idea of limitation, of finity, he was able to finally get to where he could live in the infinite. Although he did come back after ascending to meet with St. John on the island of Patmos to dictate Book of Revelation, because that was needed. Before he left, he said, "You're not ready." He said, "I could tell you more, but you're not ready for it." And I think he must have had a second thought and said, "Well, I can leave something in writing. I better not try to tell you personally." And of course, there's no evidence that John went through death, because they could never find a body on the island of Patmos. So he obviously ascended. But the book had been written. But they couldn't kill the messenger anymore, because both he and Jesus were gone. We need to strive for the same kind of goal. Do something worthwhile for all humanity. How much time do we spend on frivolous activities? Some people live for the weekend, where they have big plans for entertainment. In fact, it's common for people to be couch potatoes during the week in the evening. And if they're not couch potatoes, they're glued to social media, social networks. They live on their cell phone. The addiction has become so severe that many companies have come to the conclusion that they must require their individuals, their staff, not to make any cell phone or receive any cell phone calls during business hours. In fact, I know some of them have lockers where they have to have them locked up away from their desk. Banks are doing that. Let's look at each of the key points from this plank number 23. Number one, God is indivisible. Now, how do you think we can apply that to the definition of good? Remember, the definition of good is God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. And we talked about omniaction. If God is the only action, there can be no accident. Nothing can be fractured. In other words, when it says God is indivisible, if we're going to reflect God as the image and likeness of God, we cannot be separated from God. There can't be any fracture between God and us as the image. There can't be any separation. There can't be any delay. I mean, God communicates directly, being the source. And how does he communicate with his manifestation? Through his laws. The laws of God are the method of communication. Mary Baker Eddy is the one that has the third quote at the beginning of the textbook. And it says, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." Do you think that it could mean that she prays continuously by living her prayer? The Bible says we must pray without ceasing. Can you think of any way that that can be done unless we're living the prayer of goodness, the prayer of perfection? In other words, striving in everything we do to do it perfectly. Everything. Mary Baker Eddy said that Jesus was the best man that ever walked on the earth. That means he excelled as a human being. Are we excelling as a human being, which gives us the path to divinity? We must excel in the visible form before we can excel in the next step up. Isaiah tells us we have to take a step at a time. Mary Baker Eddy repeats that same idea. Don't expect to take one leap, because it doesn't happen that way. We have to condition thought a little at a time. That's why the perseverance is so important. The discipline, having a roadmap, and never giving up, being tenacious, perseverant, step at a time. Compounding is a valuable, valuable tool. We build a base that enlarges, and we keep having an increased base that compounds. And it's not a straight line, it's a geometric curve. Whenever we are on a worthwhile schedule, following this kind of a motive and this kind of a theme, we're going to have all kinds of temptations to be diverted. If you've done any studying on time management, it says you start your day with the most important things to do. You don't clean up little things here and there so that you'll be ready to start the main project, because those are distractions. You may never get to the main project if you do that. You must begin your day doing the most important thing in reaching your goal. And your goal should be to give things away. And the easiest way to do that is to recognize that you're here for a purpose. And it should be to make other people happy. That's exactly what Frederick L. Rawson stated. That's our purpose in being on planet Earth, or whatever planet we're on. They say men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Whatever planet you're on, we have a choice with every moment. There are 1,440 minutes in a day. Richard Strain was having a very difficult time. He was away from home 18 hours a day, working his tail off, coming home exhausted. And the 6 hours he was home, that was to eat dinner, sleep, prepare for the next day, probably grab something for breakfast, and he was out the door. He knew he was just going around in a circle in a rut. So he went to a Christian Science practitioner, and she said, "Well, when do you study?" He was silent, because he didn't study at all. Not 1 minute out of the 24 hours a day, out of the 1,440 minutes, not a single moment. He was ashamed to tell her. He said, "Never." She said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you will never work out of your problem." He didn't know what to say. She didn't have any more conversation with him. She simply asked him, "When do you study?" And she made the statement, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you will never work out of your problem." That's all she said. That was the end of her side of the conversation. I don't know. It doesn't say how long he sat there trying to churn this around in his thought. But he finally told her, "Okay, I'm going to do it." He apparently didn't have any idea how he was going to do it. but he made a commitment to do it. He reported back later that by the end of the first full week, his schedule had improved so much that he had no trouble with getting his work done and studying 5 hours a day. So I presume the first day he didn't get any sleep. And the second day maybe he got a little bit, I don't know. But he said by the end of one full week, that was the progress. He ended up becoming a popular speaker. And this is part of his, what he tells the public. He's listed on our website as an author, Strain, S like Sam, T-R-A-I-N, Richard Strain. We have to decide what we're going to do with our moments. Mary Baker Eddy said, what one does with their moments is often the difference between success and failure. And most of us waste most of the moments. The Bible says we're supposed to tithe. Tithe means a tenth part. Most people interpret that to mean they should give 10% of their paycheck away when they get it. Think about everything that you have. If you want to be a C student, then think on terms of 10%. If you want to be a B student, or an A student, or an A plus student, then you probably got to think about something different than 10%. And don't think in terms of 10% being only money. You may not give any money away, and you could give away 30%. The wealthiest man in the world, who started a department in the government called DOGE, Doge, you probably know who he is, Department of Government Efficiency, they did research on the nonprofit organizations, and they found that between 95 and 100% of every dollar they take in is money laundering for the people that are running the organization. And nothing, or no more than 5%, gets to what they're advertising for the purpose of the organization. And the Red Cross is right at the top of the list. This UNICEF, there's big ads going on right now, UNICEF, and all these other ones that are considered nonprofit organizations, they're frauds. They're big frauds that they just take advantage of your emotions to try to get you to give, give, give. And in the meantime, the people running the organization are taking, taking, taking. They're absorbing between 95 and 100% of every dollar they receive. Everyone. Every dollar. So you have to do more work than just writing a check. You have to make sure that you are getting whatever is needed to the people that need it. You have to develop and cultivate a life of giving. Every time you go on any kind of an errand, let alone what you're doing before you go on an errand, whether you're working or whether you're writing a book or whatever you're doing, whether you're an artist, pianist, whatever. Doesn't matter what you are, homemaker, teacher, ditch digger, it doesn't matter. What matters is what you do with your character, not what you're doing as a profession. What you're doing as a profession has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. What we are referring to here is your entire character. Not just one aspect of it called your profession or your avocation or your hobby or anything else. How about when you drive a car? Are you willing to give away when you're driving a car? Or do you get angry when somebody cuts in front of you? Your life is more important in how you do it than what you're doing. Are you doing it with love? Are you tolerant? Forgiving? Now, what is this business about forgiveness? You don't have to forgive if you don't condemn. The only reason you have to forgive is if you're condemning. So cut out the condemning. Then you don't have to forgive. Besides that, do you have the authority to forgive anybody of anything? If they do something wrong, is that your business? We are supposed to separate, as Christian Scientists, an evil act from a person that is doing it. Jesus could never heal anybody if he was going to condemn everybody that was attacking him. He would be focusing on the absolute wrong topic, finding fault with others, instead of healing the receptive thought. Which do we want to do? Point number two. In case you've forgotten, point number one is God is indivisible. We can't be separated from God. We should not let any of our actions be separate from what God would be doing, or Jesus, or Mary Baker Eddy, or any of the other really good thinkers in Christian Science, or in anything. Some of the best people have never even heard of Christian Science, and they live a more Christian-giving life than Christian Scientists. Remember, forget about giving to these organizations. You could have all the money in the world, and it's only going to be a waste of whatever you give them. You've got to get involved. There's a lot of ways to get involved. Put your thinking on. Put your thinking on. We've given ideas on the website. But don't write a check, because chances are it's going to be going to money laundering. And Christian Scientists are not any particularly generous group of people. I can tell you that from experience. And another organization that I know well, and I talk to them about the same topic, they send out a special email every week. And I said, how often do you get a thank you for it? They send out 2,000. 2,000 emails a week with really special information. Uplifting. And they said, we really don't get hardly any, maybe 2 or 3, 4 thank yous out of the 2,000. I said, how about your donations? She said, we get 2 or 3 small ones a month. 2,000 people. So that means they've had 8,000 or more emails in the month. Nobody's giving. No one is giving. We have the same experience here. Very few people. We have people tell us that they start their day by going to our website, and they could not do without it. And that's the end of the conversation. That's it. They just wanted us to know. It doesn't occur to them how much money it takes to have up to 3 full-time programmers working on the website. And the staff of Mary Baker Eddy Institute is paying for it all. We're paying for the whole thing. That doesn't occur to them at all. Are you one of these people that shops only for free things when you're looking for software on the internet? Do you realize that most of those places that give free software have a donate button? Or maybe and a lot of times a donate button and a professional version. So you could take your choice. If everybody gave even a small amount, you would get more out of what you're using. If you have an investment in something, you're going to get more out of it than if you get it for free. Guaranteed. If you don't give anything, don't expect to receive anything. And if you give a lot, don't expect to receive anything. Because your character shouldn't be based on what you're going to get from something. If it's based on that, then you're not really giving. You're trying to advertise. Okay, key point number two, a portion of God could not enter man because man is a reflection. Man is the image of God. The source cannot enter into its own image. A source is the source, the image is the image. Point number three, neither could God's fullness be reflected by a single man, else God would be manifestly finite, lose the deific character, and become less than God. So God cannot become finite, and that's what would have to happen if God really entered a man. Some people think, a lot of people think Jesus is God. You should read Robert C. Putnam's book on the Council of Nicaea, and therein tells you why people believe Jesus is God. We've had complete prayer treatments on that. By the way, if you have any questions about anything on the website or any other prayer treatments, and we have like 500 or more prayer treatments, so that's a lot of hours. If you have any question about any of them, go to our contact page, and it'll tell you how to contact us. Okay, number four. Allness is the measure of the infinite, and nothing less can express God. So are we only going to give God a little bit of our effort? Are we only give goodness a little bit of our effort, and the rest of it is going to be for something else, like Richard Strain? And I don't say that as a criticism. I'm only relating to you the information that he put in his writings that's on our website. He turned it around. He had his walk, and he transformed to becoming a total promoter instead of being all engrossed and trying to make a living. His whole life was turned around. If we want to be God's image and likeness, as Genesis defines us to be, then we have to do it. We can't be passive. We have to do it. Now, what can be the enticement for you to do it? If you have no confidence, you've never heard of Christian Science, and you don't know anything about it, and you're wondering, well, why should I even spend 5 minutes reading the introduction or those three quotes or anything? Well, first of all, you have to be dissatisfied with your life. If you're happy with your life, that means you're not ready to do anything different. And you may never be ready. Or you may wake up. If you awaken from your present level of spirituality, whatever that may be, that's the first step. To realize that there must be something better than what you realize your life to be right now. And if you don't, then there's nothing that will help you to make it different, because you're the first one that has to take the first step. And if you think everything is fine the way it is, then continue living that way. I can't teach you anything, because adults cannot be taught. Children can be taught, but adults have to learn on their own. So you have to learn on your own. And if you're happy with where you are, then there's nothing that you are interested in learning. And continue on being happy the way you are. That's your business. It's not my business. I'm not here to work out your salvation, and you're not here to work out my salvation. Everyone has to work out their own salvation. And if they're happy in their life the way they are, then that's fine. It's not my business. There are seven prayers that are called the Diapason of Heaven. And they are prayers by Mary Baker Eddy that she gave to her most advanced class in the College of Metaphysics in 1898. And everyone that attended that class were there because they were individually invited by Mary Baker Eddy. And at the end of only the third day, she felt like she had given them enough of the real truth about what God is and man, and that they're reflecting man. They're an individual manifestation of man reflecting God. That she gave them an assignment at the end of the third day. Find a situation that needs to be healed, and when you come back tomorrow to class, report it. Tell us what happened. Every single one in the class was successful in healing a situation at the end of the third day, before a class convened the next morning. She has stated that she established the lost element of healing in Christianity. And that's exactly what Christian Science does. And as stated previously, it is not only curative, but it's preventative. I can testify to the preventative. There were four kids in the family, and we all had perfect attendance for every year of 12 years of school. That's, you know, first through 12th grade. I never missed a day of work after I graduated from college. Never missed a day of college due to health reasons my whole life. My dad was in business for over 50 years. He never missed a day of work. My mother had four children. No doctor was involved. There was a midwife. We missed all of the childhood so-called diseases. Not a one came to our home. And I was a very aggressive individual. I raced cars. I raced a motorcycle. Both of them at 200 miles an hour. And that's when cars and motorcycles were, you know, not doing 200 miles an hour. Today, 200 miles an hour is not a big deal. But when I was racing at that speed, that was like at the peak of the speed realm. I flew a fighter jet airplane in the military. And to tell you how protected I was, well, first of all, I never had an accident on the motorcycle or on the cars. And when I was in the military, I was given orders, instead of finishing my tour and being assigned to a combat mission overseas, I was given orders to go to Bureau of Personnel in Washington, D.C. My commanding officer had no idea how that could happen. He said, people don't go to Washington, D.C. for duty. until they've been out on combat tours and been successful and had all these medals and everything from their successes. Who do you know? I told him I didn't know anyone. I had nothing to do with the order. I'd have no idea why that, you know. Well, I didn't say I had no idea why, but, you know. They said, well, we don't know how you got it, so you're really a lucky person. So I ended up going to Washington, D.C. And I wrote my own release orders when I got finished with the tasks that I'd been assigned, because that was the department that I was in. And that's what I did. I determined who was going to be released from active duty because the Department of Defense was having a cutback. And I was, you know, that was part of my job, is to select the ones that would be released early. And they said, when you get this done, then you can write your own orders and go home. I had a smile from ear to ear. So I totally missed combat duty. And you couple that with the fact that I was driving cars and motorcycle at that speed, never had an accident. Many other things in my life, the same thing. Never was involved with any disease. Had wonderful things in the business. I went into business as soon as I got out of military. As I said, Dad never missed a day of work. And he also was in the military. And he was given assignment to stay right on the base in the U.S., did not go overseas, doing things that he was skilled to do. It has been a tremendous tool for prevention for our family, all of us, all six of us, the four kids and mother and dad. And that's the best thing in the world, is to have the prevention. You don't have to worry about a cure when you don't have a problem. I'm not saying we didn't have challenges. I'm just saying that the normal stuff that people experience, such as health and accidents, we didn't have that as a part of our life. Nada. Nothing. And I'm so grateful. I don't know how people have lived without Christian Science. I really don't. I don't know how I could. We all have a mission to do. And sooner or later, I think we all wake up to it. I had no idea I'd be doing what I'm doing right now, ever. In the past, we have to keep our thought open, or we won't be able to fulfill whatever mission that we're supposed to be involved in. So please check out The Diapason of Heaven Treatments by Mary Baker Eddy on the website. We have a very extensive, easy to understand menu. And one or two clicks, you can get basically anywhere you want to go. This treatment will close by reciting what we're talking about here in terms of man being a reflection of the indivisibility of the infinite God. It's called the scientific statement of being. And it includes God and man and all of our activities. It's on page 468 from the textbook. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. There is one afterthought, so if you'll stay tuned for another minute, I'll explain it. This prayer that was just recited, the scientific statement of being, if you're sure that when you have a problem, that you are to the root of the problem and not just dealing with a symptom, then you can use this prayer that was just given to you on page 468 of Science and Health, the textbook, by including in the prayer the name of the problem. Remember, not the symptom. It could be the symptom, but chances are the way evil works, being deceptive and utilizing decoys, that the symptom by itself is not the problem. If you have any question on this, you can communicate with us. Go to the contact page. So, for example, the very first sentence where it says there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, instead of saying the word matter, or you can still use matter, and then you can say and such and such, or you can say a material life or a material universe or a material birth, something to connect it to what you're going to say is your problem. You know, it could be whatever. It could be an accident that caused something else, or it could be something you were trying to get to a meeting and you couldn't get to the meeting because you had car trouble. Well, the car trouble was not the problem. Not getting to the meeting is the problem, because there may probably would have been important things to decide at the meeting. So the problem was there was something trying to obstruct you to get to the important meeting. So you've got to recognize that as the problem and not the fact you had car trouble. So you substitute that wherever it says matter. And then when it talks about man, refer to you being an individual manifestation of man, and that you are a reflection of God, and therefore the perfection of God is reflected in you in your daily experiences. And those kinds of substitutions, if you say it with really understanding, not just the words, but understand what you're saying, you will likely find a healing effect from the efficacy of that statement of scientific being. It is January 18th, Sunday morning at 10:04. The topic of this prayer treatment has been the indivisibility of the infinite, which is plank number 23 of 32, and all 32 planks are discussed on the pages 330 to 340 of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. Thank you for listening. The end.